Welcome to the Let's Do It podcast. I'm delighted to introduce our third series, so thank you listeners for joining me today. My name is Anne Glover and I'm a birth and postnatal doula working here in our beautiful wee Northern Ireland. I also teach the wonderful Mongan Method Hypnobirthing course, the original and the best. I'm owner of motherdoula.com and co-founder of the province's first doula collective, Doulas of Northern Ireland. So I started this podcast in 2019 as a means of raising awareness about doulas in Northern Ireland and to chat about who we are, what we do, and why doulas do what we do. And then listeners asked about information on resources and what is available here in Northern Ireland to support their birthing journey, which has led to some fabulous guests chatting about their own personal birthing experiences and also guests chatting about the wide variety of services they offer locally. So please join me in welcoming new guests to this podcast. So welcome back, listeners, to another episode of Let's Do It. In this episode, I'm chatting to Tessa Finuti Sanderson about her work with girls and women as they go through various rites of passage during their lives. And no better person to tell you about this than Tessa herself. So welcome, Tessa, to Let's Do It. So would you mind just giving the listener an introduction to yourself and your work?
Yeah, thank you for having me. So I became a yoga teacher probably 20 years ago now, and very quickly started to teach pregnancy yoga. And that remains my favourite class of the different kinds that I teach. And then over the years, as my children started to get older, I got interested in puberty and supporting girls through that rite of passage. So you've got the rite of passage of pregnancy and birth, but then before that, sort of how to help somebody transition into their changing body. So I started doing workshops around menstrual cycle awareness, and I've been running a women's circle for 10 years now, the same circle monthly. Wow. And it's a beautiful chance to have people come together and just talk about how life is.
Yeah, and that's what I was just going to ask you, Tessa, just to expand on this this idea of women gathering together in circles, like holding circles, and women all coming together. Can you tell us, just expand that a wee bit for the listeners, just in case none of them have ever heard of this before?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes people haven't heard of it, or otherwise they think it sounds a bit strange or a bit sort of woo-woo or something like that. But it's really just to come together in a way that is very supportive. So in normal everyday conversation, I think we often have an idea of how the communication is going to work. And sometimes we're disappointed if we feel like somebody doesn't listen to us. And the idea of a talking circle is that the guidance for how we're going to communicate is laid out very explicitly. So we know that we're going to keep what's said in the circle confidential, that we're going to listen respectfully and try not to bring judgments into what other people are saying. And I think really importantly, we're not going to try and fix things or provide solutions, because I think very often in everyday life, we want to try and help people and we jump in with a solution, but actually that's not always what's wanted. And to simply be listened in, you know, how your day is going, what experience you've had, is often enough all by itself, just to be witnessed in how you are rather than somebody trying to jump in and come fix you.
Absolutely. So it's a bit, when I think we started doing doula training courses here in Northern Ireland, and that's one thing that we spend a lot of time on, is good communication and listening skills in particular. Because I do believe that a lot of people, if someone's talking to them, you're listening, but you feel as if you have to, as you said, maybe fix something or give a response. And sometimes we don't have to say anything. We just have to maybe like nod or make some sort of motion that we're here, we're there for them. And that's what I'm thinking of whenever you're talking about more of the women's circles.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes people feel a bit shy about talking in a bigger group. So something that I use a lot is something called a listening partnership. And in a listening partnership, it's usually done in pairs, and one person will speak first. It might be for 5 minutes, it might be 7 minutes, however long, and then you switch over, and the person who's been listening very carefully becomes the speaker. And when people first try it, sometimes it's feels really quite alien to them because you're used to trying to chip in. Oh yeah, that happened to me. Oh, that sounds awful. Or to keep the conversation going. And it's a very, very different experience to have somebody purely listen to you, like you were saying, with nods and eye contact. So you know that they are listening, but not to keep jumping in. And the beauty of that way of doing it is that the person who's listening isn't trying to come up with what they're going to say next, not trying to think of something clever to come back with. So it's actually very freeing because rather than being concerned about, how you're going to say something helpful or whatever it might be, you can just simply be there and totally take in what the other person is trying to say without any of your own filters. And it's a very different way of being heard when the focus is simply on what you're saying moment to moment.
Yes, it's almost having that time for people that everyone seems to be very short of in today's world. And it's having that time and presence and just honoring what they're saying, isn't it? Without continually interrupting, and as you said, having to have an answer. And I think culturally here as well, I remember being told as a child, you've got a mouth on you, speak up, say these things, answer. If someone's talking to you, answer them. And you're like, okay, so it's almost like in sort of being put into you since from a very young age, respond, respond, respond. But of course, there's many various different ways of responding, and it's having that time just to almost read the situation and listen, and using the different tools of communication, isn't it?
Well, people might have had the experience that they're in a big family and there's always people talking all over each other all of the time. It's very hard to get a word in edgeways. And so it can be a real revelation to come to a circle where you're taking it in turns and you're not going to talk over each other. And if a facilitator is skilled, then they have ways of helping everybody have a chance to speak if they want to, rather than one person dominating the whole conversation and you sort of feel like you've not had chance to say what's important to you.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So whenever I'm trying to visualize these circles, about how many people would be attending, or does it vary?
It can really vary. At the moment, my women's circle, it's usually about 12 of us, 12 to 14. Sometimes in the past, when it was in a different venue, a bigger venue, it could be as many as 20.
Wow.
But it can really vary. If somebody might decide just to have a small circle with a few friends, maybe five people sitting around together.
Lovely.
And it can be anything. It doesn't have to be a women's circle. It could be, for example, there are grief circles. So you might have a particular focus. Maybe it's a pregnancy circle where everybody in the circle is pregnant. Whatever your interest, whatever your demographic, I know in England, menopause circles are becoming more and more popular as a way to have chance to speak about symptoms and everything that's happening for somebody.
Yeah, and they're probably going to become much more popular now, as we hear there's much more coverage in the media and press about menopause. And again, we're thinking back to, to cultures as well. I know as well growing up that menopause was never really talked about, neither was, girls when they started having their periods. Even like the word period wouldn't have been spoken about. I remember people saying, oh, she got her granny. What does that mean? Yeah, she's got her period, and it's almost like this language was used as to cover it up. cover up, the embarrassment or the shame or whatever the feelings were around a girl having her period, that it wasn't talked about. And it's just it is really intriguing, to think now there's actually situations with, because I know you mentioned that you set up like girls' circles as well to talk, for them to talk about going through that early rite of passage as well.
Yeah, I could say I think sometimes mums who bring their daughters to the sessions that I run for girls, they're often called changing bodies workshops. So different age children, but it might be that mum is quite open with her child, and that's why she's bringing her along to a session like that. But it's so wonderful for that child to hear other women speaking quite openly about puberty, about periods, about period products, and take away some of the emotional charge out of it and the taboo of it. Because then, if there's an issue, they can speak to a teacher about it at school a bit more easily, or if they have an issue they need to speak to a doctor about. If they've got the right kind of words and the right language, they'll get help sooner.
That's amazing. So it's a lot of empowerment, isn't it? It's really empowering the girls to have that knowledge.
Yeah, I think that's what runs through all of the work that I've done really, is to empower girls and women around their bodies. So I've written a number of books to do exactly that. So there's a series of girls' books just to begin to introduce the right kind of language, introduce period in a very gentle way, because I think it's about answering questions as they come up. So when a child's really little, they might have quite an innocent question, and you just answer it in one sentence. As they get older, you need a few more sentences to explain something. But it's much easier that way than waiting to have the talk that everybody's afraid of, the sort of tween or teen is afraid of it, and the parents afraid of it and feeling very awkward. Whereas if you've been drip feeding, answers to things all the way through, it's much easier.
Yeah, because I mean it's a very intimate thing to be talking about, isn't it? But by talking out loud and talking in a safe environment, sort of, as you said, busts any myths around it and takes the mystery away from it, the mystery that shrouds, and all these things that are happening to girls and women. It just makes it easier for everyone
Yeah.
then.
And I think going back to pregnancy and birth, I mean, we were talking about communication before, and I think it sets you up for traveling that journey more easily. If you've grown up through puberty, through, your menstrual cycle years, maybe you've had issues with your periods. If you've been helped have the right language and to have agency around your body and feel empowered, like you were saying, it's going to be much easier when you get to pregnancy and birth to navigate your way through that journey, and to,
Absolutely.
to be able to talk to the health professionals and get the care that you want.
Yes, without feeling embarrassed or feeling that you are the proverbial pain in the neck or whatever, or feeling that you shouldn't be wasting their time, that it actually is really important. So it's really instilling that confidence in them from a very quite young age, isn't it? Which is a wonderful thing to do. Yeah, can't have enough confidence in this world. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think I've been volunteering at my local hospital for might even be 8 years now. We have something called the Maternity Voices Partnership. It's in lots of hospitals sort of around England. And the topic that comes up most meetings is communication.
Yeah.
So it's just there all the time where people are trying to put across what they're worried about, or what they're hoping will happen in the birth, and they're not being heard, or they feel like control's been taken away from them. And it's just year after year, that is the theme that comes up again and again.
Yeah, and I have to be honest and say that as working as a doula as well, it is something that a lot of mummies and sometimes daddies and other birth partners will say, that during the pregnancy and birth that they just didn't feel that they were listened to. It's back to those listening skills that we started talking about, isn't it? And it's having the knowledge and the confidence to speak up and try, get your message across without being a nuisance. Yeah. But when you think, especially with pregnancy and birth, it's something that only happens once, twice, three times, not that often in your life. And we always remember how we birth our babies, and I keep saying this, and it's so important, to have your voice heard. And why wouldn't your voice be heard? Why would people not listen to you whenever you're going through this rite of passage, that's going to change your life forever. And it's a very powerful thing to say, but it is so important. It can actually make the difference between remembering a good birthing experience or even end up with birth trauma, not being listened to. So your work sounds absolutely fascinating. I've heard you mention your daughters. So do you have
Two daughters,
two daughters? How lovely. And what ages are they, Tessa?
10 and 13.
Oh, lovely. Just perfect time for your books. Were they the
So they're
inspiration?
always my first readers of the
Yeah.
books.
And is it because of your daughters that's drawn you to being an author of these kind of books, or were you there before you had your children?
Well, I think that was actually the inspiration behind setting up the Women's Circle first, because I thought, wouldn't it be wonderful if there's a group of sort of honorary aunties that are around, because I don't live near my parents, I don't live near my sister, so we don't have family close by. But I thought if there are honorary aunties that are sort of like-minded to me and are happy to answer questions about all sorts of things, then even if in the future, for some reason, they don't want to talk to me, there are plenty of other people that will give them really good advice. And that was part of the driver behind setting up the Women's Circle and having a community. Because at the time, when I set it up, my youngest was, I think, 18 months old. And so I was meeting lots of people. I'd moved not long before to where I live now. But they were all the same age and they had the same age children. And I thought, how wonderful to be more plugged into the whole community, different age women. So that was what started the circle. And then listening to people's experiences in the circle, because at the beginning it was more focused on sort of menstrual cycle awareness and learning about our different experiences, because people can experience periods so differently, they can experience ovulation and PMT so differently. I began to realize how so many of them said, "Oh, I wish I knew this information when I was a girl, when I first started my period." And I
Yeah.
think that's what made me write the first book, because I couldn't find a book exactly how I wanted to introduce the topic to my own daughters. So that was the inspiration. It came from listening to other people.
And that's brilliant that you're able to draw on that and use that to educate. Because basically that's what you're doing, educating a whole new generation as well. It's fascinating. Yeah.
The book that followed the first one is called Ruby Luna's Moon Time.
Oh.
And so it's a little bit, I don't know if you've heard of Adrienne Mole's Secret Diary.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like that, but for girls. And it's talking about Ruby, who gets her period and tries different period products and starts secondary school. So it's sort of following, it's a diary format. And people have said that they find it really fun. And
Yeah.
girls tend to, they start reading, they can't put it down.
Oh.
They read it in one go. There's definitely a thirst for knowledge about themselves and their own bodies.
Yeah, and I suppose it's not just for girls. Like, I'm sure boys could lift it up and read it as well and educate themselves too and have that
Yeah,
awareness.
I'd be thrilled if the boys are reading it as well.
Yeah, why not? Yeah, probably wouldn't tell their friends, but you never know. To have that information. So another part of your work, Tessa, is also your yoga that you mentioned. So what brought you to teaching pregnancy yoga or teaching yoga? Were you always a yogi?
Well, I came across meditation first when I was at university, and meditation or university life can be really hectic and chaotic. So I found meditation was a really nice way of having some calm in
Yeah.
that busy life. And it was after that I got into all the yoga movements and things like that. But Once I started teaching yoga generally, I found that I really wanted to specialize in pregnancy yoga because I would say in my pregnancy yoga classes, usually about two-thirds of the women there have never actually done yoga before. So it's completely new to them, but they think, well, it might help with the pregnancy, it might help with the birth, so I'll give it a go. And it's
Right.
wonderful because once they've tried it, they tend to then come to mum and baby yoga afterwards. So we
Yeah.
do little moves like massaging their tummies and songs with the baby. So they're very much integrated into the class. And then later on, they'll come to my Well Woman class. So they stay with me for years. And for me, the beauty of the pregnancy yoga is that it gives people an opportunity to really listen to their bodies. We were talking about listening to each other before, but with the pregnancy yoga, to listen to their own body. And when they week after week are listening, oh yeah, that move feels nice. If I say a hip circle, maybe you're on hands and knees, doing circles with your hips. And I'll offer, try smaller circles or big circles. So people are trying to find what's most comfortable for them. And when they start to do that, I think it really prepares them for the birth because then they'll keep trying things. They've tried all sorts of different positions over the weeks of coming to the classes that might help them during the labor, and they'll feel less inhibited to get into those positions.
Yeah.
And they'll keep trying to find what makes them most comfortable and
Yeah.
that they can, rest in between contractions. And I think that's where a lot of then your own agency can come from, because there's this feeling inside of yourself, I know my body.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just getting to know that and to trust your body as well. Your body's grown the baby and your body will birth the baby, no matter how the baby is born, So yeah, it's just invaluable. And did you come across the pregnancy yoga then before you were pregnant? Or was it
Yes, yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, I was teaching. I think I was probably teaching for about 5 years before. Can't do the maths now. I'll have to sit and work it out one day. But I was, yeah, teaching pregnancy yoga before. And I think all the years of doing meditation and that mindfulness really helped prepare me for the birthing journey because just trying to stay very much in the moment rather than think ahead to, oh, what if this happens? What if that happens? Sometimes people can get into catastrophizing the situation. Whereas I think with all the meditation that I'd done, I very much just tried to take each moment as it came, each contraction as it came. With my first daughter, I was planning a home birth, and what I hadn't realized was that sometimes there weren't enough midwives to attend a home birth. Nobody ever had mentioned that to me. So on the evening I went into labor, sort of it got underway, and my husband phoned the hospital and they said, oh, unfortunately there's nobody to come out. So at the time that was a real shock, because I hadn't been prepared for that.
Wow.
And I traveled in to the hospital and actually had a very straightforward water birth, so it could have happened at home.
Yeah.
But I think, sort of having the meditation techniques, the relaxation helped me with that bump in the
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because that could be a bit of a game changer for a lot of women, isn't, having to change your plan, especially when you're in labour and you feel as if you don't have any choices. But yeah, that's great to hear that you had such a lovely experience then in the water.
Yeah, I still remember the lovely Dorothy, the midwife who was
Yeah.
there. Zara was born.
Wow, how lovely. And what about your second birth?
Well, the second one was a home birth, because of what happened with the first one, because we at the time didn't have a dedicated home birth service in my area. I'm in Reading in Berkshire, sort of west of London. So we didn't have a dedicated home birth service, so I decided to hire an independent midwife to ensure that if everything was going fine, I could stay at home. And fortunately, it all went ahead as planned. And what I often tell people in my classes is if you have health insurance through your work or your partner's work, it's really worth checking if you can have a doula paid for or an independent midwife paid for. Because often people don't think about that and they don't ask. And sometimes it's covered. So
Yeah, so true. It's a really good point, Tessa. Lovely and brilliant that you're able to have an independent midwife. Unfortunately, here in Northern Ireland, we don't have any independent midwives, which is a shame. Just another choice that's taken away from the birthing women here. But it's lovely to hear the positive stories and how that continuity of care, just makes a difference as well and gives you that peace of mind, doesn't it? Like having that person there was independent midwife and a doula sometimes, or you can have either or both. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, that's great. Well, it's really lovely to hear your positive birthing experiences because that will radiate amongst your community as well, I'm sure. Yeah. So tell me, what do you know anything about doulas or how you did find out about doulas or then your community?
Yeah, well, we have quite a few doulas around where I live, and I'm very often telling people in the classes about them because they may never have heard of a doula before. And I think what sometimes they underestimate is if their partner has never seen a birth before, it can be a really big journey to go on. And I often say, it'd be wonderful if you consider a doula that has seen different kinds of births. They can be another source of support during the journey. And yeah, so we have a good relationship with a number of doulas locally, and sometimes they come in at the end of my class to talk about what they do. And I'm a really big advocate because I just see the difference that it makes. In the birth preparation workshops that I run, a big part of it really is trying to help the birth partners feel more confident to advocate for, the birth that they're hoping for. But it's a really big ask, I think. Some of them don't feel very confident because they see the doctors as having years and years of experience, and they've got sort of 7 years medical training, and who am I to question that? So it can be quite difficult for them if they are feeling that they're not confident about asking questions to help them turn that around. Whereas if you've got a doula that is, has been into the hospitals, has been into different situations, then they've got somebody who's on their side that knows what they're hoping to happen. And or maybe it's just that the birth partner's got very tired. They don't have the same sort of hormones running through their system as the birthing woman. So just to give them a break. And I've at the next birth preparation workshop I'm running, I've got a lady coming with her birth partner and her mum, because in the first birth she said that her birthing partner, her husband, just really felt out of his depth, and she just wanted to have somebody else there that could
Yeah,
support her as well.
exactly. This is what we keep saying as doulas. We keep trying to raise awareness because it can actually feel like a quite alien experience, I think, for a lot of dads and birthing partners who have never been, and a lot of men and other birthing partners have never been in a hospital environment before. And it can bring that fear. It can bring a bit of fear as well, or just being out of their depth, or yeah, it's just nice to have someone who is looking out for them as well, who knows them, and knows what is really important for them and how to support the birthing partner as well, which is great.
Where I live, it's very multicultural. We have people all over the world that come and live in our area. And sometimes it's a matter of language as well. It's not only do you know how the NHS system works and how do you navigate yourself through that system. I think that's hard enough for somebody from England. But it's also the language. Like, I remember a few people saying, or one couple in particular, they were Lebanese. And at one point, the doctor started saying to them, "Oh, we're going to have to go into theatre." And they were completely confused because they associated theatre with plays and entertainment. And they had no idea what was going on because they'd never heard the word theatre in the context of surgery in a hospital. And I think that's another really good thing, whether it's a doula or, maybe it's a friend that you've made in the local area who knows a bit more about the system, that can just be that. It's like a sort of a buffer, isn't it? That's going to feeling of safety that you want to have, that somebody is there to support you and help you find your way through.
Yeah, a source of reassurance. Yeah, and try to maintain, a bit of calmness, as we know how important remaining calm is in all situations in life. Yeah. So Tess, I can't believe, that we have been chatting here for almost 30 minutes. It's been lovely. So before we go, I'd really like, to give you a bit of time to, to give your books a good plug here, and also your social media handles, if you would just like to share that with the listeners. Yeah.
Yeah, so my website is tessavenutisanderson.co.uk, and you can find me with the same name on Instagram, tessa.venuti.sanderson. But all my books are on Amazon. So the girls' books are Ruby Luna, Ruby Luna's Curious Journey, Ruby Luna's Moon Time. But what I'm most excited about is I've got another book coming out in October. So this is a co-authored one with my lovely colleague Julia Davis, and it's about circles. So it's called Circle Holding, A Practical Guide to Facilitating Talking Circles. And it's a really step-by-step guide, because there are a few other books out there about helping people have sharing circles, listening circles, people call them different things. But this is really, if you're excited about the idea and you want to set it up, it will take you step by step through the process, because I think they're just needed. They make such a difference to feeling of community. And so yeah, I would love people to have a look at that if that's something they're interested
Oh well, I'm sold. So I look forward to
in.
reading that book. Yeah, it'll be fascinating. Yeah, so lovely. So Tessa, it just leaves me to say a massive big thank you for agreeing to come on to the podcast and spreading your wonderful knowledge and experience, and hopefully planting a few seeds to grow here in Northern Ireland as well. That would be amazing. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You're very welcome. So thank you, listeners, for tuning in as always, and I hope you enjoyed this episode of Let's Do It. Please feel free to subscribe, it's free, and you just never know what we'll be chatting about on Let's Do It, so don't miss out and subscribe now. Also, feel free to share this episode or the podcast with family, friends, and colleagues, and help me to raise awareness about the various topics covered in the podcast. Should you wish to get in touch with me, you can contact me via my website, motherdoula.com, or doulasni.co.uk, through my Instagram page at annhypnodoula, or Facebook pages Hypnobirth and Anglover and Doula Anglover. You will definitely find me once you start searching. There's no excuse. So here, have a great day and see you next time.